Marissa Smith is who you see. What a cooler combo in here. Crack a cold one, we're on the air. Big talking brewskis. Marissa Smith is who you see. What a cooler combo in here. Crack a cold one, we're on the air. Kicking back, having a few beers, we're chatting. Pull up your chair, we're all relaxing. Any subject, we never dismiss. Big talking brewskis with Marissa Smith. Comedy, sex, relationships, more. Any subject, we got it in store. Big talking brewskis is coming in live. Crack when open, Marissa has arrived. Big talking brewskis with Marissa Smith. Yeah.
Hey guys, happy Friday. Welcome to Big Talkin' Brewskis. I'm Marissa Smith. We got Rodney Daniels with us.
What's up, folks? Happy Friday. It's Big Talkin' Brewskis time.
We've got Kevin Smith Kirkwood with us.
How you doing, people?
How you doing, Kevin?
I'm good. How are you? Good to see you.
Good to see you too. So how was your week, Kevin?
The week's been good so far. Been working. I'm currently in the Broadway show Kinky Boots.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you very much. So we just finished a I'll take that applause. We just finished a crazy holiday schedule.
Yeah.
But tickets are selling really well. So we're having a good time.
No, that's
with
awesome.
Audiences.
Yeah. That's awesome. So Ronnie, how was your week?
My week was good. Just, you know, working the 9 to 5, you know, the normal, and then I got a show tonight at Broadway Comedy Club, so
nice.
Doing that, you know.
Nice. So, Kevin, how long have you been with Kinky Boots?
We just celebrated backstage. We had a cake on Monday. We celebrated 5 years since the workshop of Kinky Boots.
Wow.
And then we did Chicago pre-Broadway tryout that same year. And then in April, we'll celebrate 4 years on Broadway.
Wow. Congratulations.
Yeah.
No,
amazing.
That is amazing.
It's a blessing, and I'll take it.
Yeah. I mean, I've wanted to see it, but like I haven't seen it yet, but I did see the movie. Like what do you think is like the like or would you say is like the biggest difference between like the Broadway show and the film?
Well, I mean, basically that they're singing and dancing.
Okay.
I loved the movie. I thought it was adorable. I thought it was charming and sweet. But it's the kind of story that kind of begs for singing and dancing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, in glamorous costumes. And so I think that's the biggest difference is that we, you know, we energize it a little bit with the singing and dancing music by Cyndi Lauper.
Right.
So you can't get better than that.
No.
And Harvey Fierstein wrote the book for the Broadway show.
Right.
But I think, yeah, I think that's the biggest difference. I think it's just a lot more fun and joyful than the movie.
Yeah. Okay.
Who was your favorite lead to work with so far?
Oh, well, you know, obviously, you know, Billy Porter originated the role.
Right.
And I've been a big fan of Billy Porter. He was one of my idols even in college. I used to try to imitate his voice. So, you know, you can't compare to the original. It's hard to do.
Right.
But let me tell you, Todrick Hall, ladies and gentlemen,
is
currently killing it as Lola on Broadway. You can only see him through March 5th.
Okay.
And he's just got so much natural star quality and presence and energy. He's fun on stage and off stage and very gracious and generous. He bought the whole cast one piece onesies because we liked his onesie that he was wearing.
No, that's really nice.
He's just a gentleman and a great guy. So
awesome.
I'm having a great time with Todrick. Only through March 5th, come see him.
Okay. So now is the time we need to go.
Where are we going?
We need to. Yeah, we'll figure it out. Yeah, no, we will figure it out and we will come go. Now, especially in the political climate that we have today, like what kind of what do you feel like the message of the show is that's so important right now?
Well, it's about accepting yourself for who you are, loving yourself, and it's about accepting and understanding the differences in other people and realizing that you have more in common with people than you do differences.
Right.
And Lola's a black drag queen, mm-hmm. who saves this factory, dying factory in London, mm-hmm. By teaching them how to make boots for drag queens, basically.
Right.
And so it's a totally new niche market that they're trying to explore, and Lola basically helps them design the boots and saves the factory.
Right.
But in order to do that, Lola and this white guy, Charlie, whose dad died, and the factory's been in the family for generations.
Right.
And they have to come together, and they find out that they have similarities in their stories and have issues with their father, which I think
everybody
a lot
does.
Of people can relate yeah. to. You know what I mean? And so
if your dad's alive, you've got issues.
Either of your parents are like,
you probably still have yeah. issues.
It's very true. It's very true. But I think it's important. It's about coming together in spite of our differences and learning that we're all a human family and accepting each other for who we are and accepting ourselves. And I think that's very, very important in
no,
the
definitely.
Current political climate.
Like, what do you feel is like the most fulfilling thing that, since you've been with this show since the beginning, like, so I'm sure that you've grown as a performer and as a person, but like, in if you were to kind of like look back on the last few years, what would you say is the thing that you realized that you gained the most out of being a part of this production?
Well, I've definitely gotten to live a few dreams. We performed on the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade.
Oh, that's amazing.
That
yeah.
is amazing.
Yeah.
We got to perform on the Tony Awards.
Oh, yeah.
At Radio City Music Hall, yeah. which, of course, as a theater kid, was always a dream.
Yeah, that's yeah. like...
You know, that's big.
Right, that's
yeah,
huge.
That's huge.
And we won the Tony, and then we won the Grammy. And... but it's seeing... So all of that stuff has been great.
Right.
But seeing... the culture respond to the message has been beautiful and amazing, and makes me realize how important it is what we do and the message that we're putting out there of acceptance
right.
and love and coming together. Seeing people react to that and cry in the audience and stand up and applaud at the end just reminds me that as an artist, you know, we have important roles.
Right.
In our society and in our culture. And
especially for like the kids that are like, you know, looking up to you and you know, you're living some child's dream right now.
Yeah, because as a lot of people, kid, that's like always what I've wanted to do is like, you know, Broadway. Like everybody like growing up, that's always what I wanted to do. And so you get to do that like every day. Do you like pinch yourself?
Absolutely. Are you kidding? Absolutely. And you go to the stage door and you meet these kids who, like you said, have that dream of performing on Broadway. And I was one of those kids. When I first moved to New York City to go to Fordham University, I saw Rent like 20, 25 mm-hmm. times from the front row because they had cheap seats for students. And I was one of those kids who was at the stage door every time saying, thank you, thank you, thank you. I worship you. I look up to you. I can't wait to do this. I want to do this. And so to see that reflected in these young kids' eyes always makes me so grateful, especially on those tired two-show days that we're not supposed to complain about. Because we're crying me a Broadway river, right?
Yeah. You got two shows.
Exactly. Oh, right. Must be tough. Broadway so hard. Shut up. Nobody wants to hear that. But it's true. But yeah, seeing that reflected in people's eyes is awesome.
And we've got Jason Cross with us.
Yes, I'm here.
How you doing, Jason?
I'm good. This has been a great week.
Yeah,
this
it's been great.
A better week.
He already knows what I'm going to ask him.
What's up? How's the week? It's a great week. I already know. No, this has been an amazing week.
Yeah.
Like, too good to be true.
Really?
Yeah.
So now, why is this such an amazing week for you?
Well, I was back in Chicago
know,
for the last week, and it opened my eyes to a lot of things, and I forgot that I had some in Chicago, and then I found it, and I was like, oh, fuck, I forgot I left this here.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm
and
not
then there's a big fight Saturday. It's nothing illegal. I just don't want to say it. It might, you know, put too many eyes on me.
Okay. Okay. I'm not gonna
my
pry.
Getaway stash. I was like, fuck, I left all this here. Because I forgot I left it like 6-7 years ago, and I was going through my old baseball cards and all this shit. Then I looked, I was like, What the fuck? So you know.
So,
Kevin, now you have your own off-Broadway show, right?
I do. And it's a soul show. It's a tribute show to Whitney Houston.
Okay.
Called Kevin Smith Kirkwood is Classic Whitney Alive.
Okay.
That's right. That's right. And what we do is we take, I'm one of the biggest Whitney Houston fans you'll ever meet. I grew up in the 80s in the height of her fame. I'm from the hood. So, you know, people like her and Michael Jackson broke so many barriers.
Yes, absolutely.
And I was singing in church and a big belter, so I emulated her voice a lot.
Well, you know what you got to do now, right? You didn't put yourself on a hot seat. You got to give us a Whitney belt.
Oh, I don't
know. Come on, you can't be saying all this shit.
Right.
Oh, come on. You are putting me on the hot seat.
You're on the hot seat. You better break out some bodyguard or something.
I don't know about that.
Or do we got something in common? Do it with Bobby Brown or something.
That's a good one.
I know. That's an obscure reference. That's not just,
For real.
You know what? Go on YouTube. You can find.
No, you got to crack that glass.
We got napkins.
You're going to have to just trust me on this one.
Okay.
So, yeah, I created this show as a tribute to Whitney. It's basically, I wanted to do one of her concerts front to back.
Okay.
And as her, dressed as Whitney Houston. That's me as Whitney.
Oh, shit, you got the...
You look really
just good,
like,
yeah.
I was looking at pictures online, and I was like, wow.
Was it hard to find a white dress? Because the white dress, was it hard to... Because I know they get, like, shit tailor-made, and it's, like, one of a kind, and...
I have a dress shop in Astoria, Queens, and I'm not going to give away my secret, the name.
Right.
But that's where I got that dress, and several of my dresses. And then I shop around at other places. I'm lucky because I'm a skinny dude. so I can buy off the rack. And then I've had a few pieces made for me, too, including some bodysuits and a long floor-length white fur coat, which you know, Whitney loved first.
Yes, she did. She was known for that.
So we rock that, and we take arrangements... live arrangements, because you know she would take one of her songs and just make it different every time she sang it live.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we take specific live arrangements that are my favorite and do them arrangement for arrangement, riff for riff, beat for beat, as a tribute to her, and we string them together. And I wrote a script based on some of her interviews and some of her banter from these live concerts.
Okay.
Oh, wow,
and then we have backup singers who play her mother Sissy Houston.
Oh yes.
Her brother Gary Houston. Bet Sussman, who is her white, longtime piano playing diva friend, and also Bobby Brown makes it.
Really?
In the show and dances.
Okay.
Is there a Dionne Warwick in it? That's
her aunt.
No Dionne yet.
Okay.
They actually, I was about to say they never performed a duet together, but that's not true because they performed on the Grammy Awards.
I was going to say,
Luther Vandross and Stevie Wonder, right?
Yes.
But no Dionne yet, but that's an idea. And we keep changing the show and adding different medleys. We just added the, I don't know if you know the time when she performed I Love You Porgy into And I'm Telling You I'm Not Going From Dreamgirls into I Have Nothing. It's like this epic.
That just sounds intense.
That's
a tearjerker right
there. Right.
That's like an emotional.
That's a big one.
Yeah.
That's a big one.
That's emotional.
Go to YouTube. Look that up.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
That is definitely emotional.
So we're just preparing for our next New York City dates. New York City dates are going to be announced very soon. So check me out on social media. And
what's your social media handles?
Kevin Smith Kirkwood on Facebook, Kevin Smith Kirkwood on Instagram, and K Smith Kirkwood on Twitter. And also check out my website, kevinsmithkirkwood.com.
Spell Kirkwood just in case. You know.
K-I-R-K-W-O-O-D. Kevin Smith Kirkwood. And there's only one.
The one and only.
And we got him.
We got him right here. Big Talking Brewskis. There's no imitations. So now, how long have you been running this show?
Actually, it's only been a little over a year.
Oh, wow. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And where has it been, where have you been performing it at?
Mainly at Joe's Pub at the Public Theater.
Okay.
Which is downtown on Lafayette Street. We've also played The Cutting Room on 32nd Street. And I also played, we had a small stint on America's Got Talent.
Oh, congrats. Oh.
You know, it was all right. And we also played a celebrity cruise. Cruise last year, so I got to perform it sort of all over the world.
So now, where did the cruise go?
We went to Monaco, we went to Barcelona, it went to Athens, it went to Mykonos, it went to Florence, Sicily.
Yeah,
I'm living a dream. You get to do his art and travel
at the same time.
Exactly. After the show, I'm going to be chilling in Monaco. Like that's just living the life. Damn. Kevin Smith Kirkwood.
I'm trying, dude. I'm trying. But the response has been great in the first year. I mean, it sort of has taken on a life of its own a little bit, which to my amazement and surprise. And we had a great piece from the Huffington Post.
Oh, that's awesome.
About
the
show. Check that out online. And also a few really amazing reviews that just gave me some great compliments.
Congratulations.
Also, I have to say, I got to perform through a chain of events surrounding the show. I got to perform at a Halloween party at Whitney's New Jersey mansion. Not even joking. Blew my mind. This was this past October. The current owners, through a friend named Pam Mincy, who I love.
That's how I know you.
That's right. Connections.
Exactly.
So she is friends with the current owners of the house. They came to see my show. They loved the show. They came back. They said, We have a Halloween party at Whitney's house every year. We're very protective about who we let into the house and invite, but you have to come, and we want you to perform as Whitney.
That's
so
awesome.
Mind blown, performing as Whitney
in Whitney's house.
Getting dressed in her bedroom, in her bathroom. It was all kinds of chills.
Did you feel a certain kind of energy when you got there? Could you feel her spirit?
Absolutely. Are you kidding? We went downstairs into her vocal booth where she recorded.
She had the studio in her house?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Oh, she's not playing. And I went into the studio, and they cleared the equipment out, but the studio's still there, and I went into the vocal booth and closed the door. And then I just started singing, "And I will always love you." You know, I told you I'm not warmed up. So I started singing that song, and I'm belting through that song, and then I started tearing up, and I come out of the room, and there was constant, you know, party music playing over the loudspeaker, and my friends are like, "How did you feel? Do you feel her?" I was like, "She's here, you guys. She's here." And then the next song that came over was "If I." And we all just froze, got tears, and started crying. It was an amazing experience. And then I also met Donna Houston, her sister-in-law, manager of Nippy Inc., who is also one of the executives of the estate. And we became friends. She just came to see Kinky Boots and now wants to come see the show. I love her. They've been so nice to me, the family. So I'm just humbled and trying to do Whitney proud, for sure.
Yeah, no, it's amazing.
That's amazing.
What's the... I'm not even gonna step on his applause break.
That's applause from Whitney.
thank you, Whit. Thank you, Nibby.
What was like the most surprising thing that you saw in the house?
The most surprising thing that I saw in the house,
or like something that just kind of made you step back.
Well, I mean, they had one of her Versace shoes that had fallen behind a big dresser or something that they found, which was amazing. They also found some paper documents. And when you see things like that, it really hits you. I mean, things that she owned and possessed and touched. There was an old crumpled cigarette pack that they found. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
things
they just
like
bought
that.
The house as is. They didn't clean it up before? God damn, they sold that house in a hurry. They found documents and paperwork. They found
Right? You would found they would have cleared out a whole, I mean, but.
A 1996 1040.
It's a huge it's a huge house, though, right?
Huge. The estate is huge. Pool house, upstairs, downstairs. The property is huge. Tennis courts.
But still, to find a pump behind a dresser, somebody didn't do a good cleaning.
And
job.
It was a Versace pump.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure we're
Cinderella shit. Where's the pump?
Right.
That's like a year's worth of salary.
I would have that shit on eBay.
Yeah.
I would have that on eBay.
One Whitney Houston shoe right here.
You only need one left foot.
You know some pervert to buy it and be drinking champagne out of it and shit. Some foot fetish motherfucker.
It's my prerogative.
And a crumble pack of cigarettes. Was it a pack of Newports?
I think it was a Winston.
You know all black people fuck with
Newports.
Really?
Yeah.
And I know she smoked Winston.
I know she fucked with Newports for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. But
Winston.
Yeah. She was a Winston. Newport. What's the other green shit?
Salem's.
Yeah. Salem's. Not Virginia Slims. That's what I'm thinking. Those are green, right?
Those are white.
What's the brown ones?
The brown ones.
You got me on that.
Wait, the cigarette is brown or the package is brown?
The cigarette is brown.
Moore's. Yeah.
I don't know your cigarettes. It's cigarette jeopardy.
I've been smoking since I was 11.
What's the one? What's the ones with the, what's the ones with a little hole in a filter?
Parliament.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Here on Cigarette Jeopardy.
Right.
What's the ones with a little ball in it that you crush?
Those are crushed camels.
Ball? Menthol or regular.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you can be like a regular cigarette or you can make,
a menthol. Yes. Yeah.
You know what? I'm sick of this regular cigarette.
It's choose your own adventure cigarette.
Yep.
What will they think of
I'm
next?
I'm feeling real black today. Menthol.
Menthol. I am meeting with my accountant. Regular.
Mainstream flavor, yes.
Yeah. You said mainstream.
So, Kevin, what do you feel about Kimberell's recent rant?
Oh, boy.
Oh, who? Yeah, that's a tough one.
Yo,
Kimberell.
You ever heard about this?
No.
So for people that don't know who Kimberell is, who is she?
She's a gospel recording star.
Oh, okay. yes.
Amazing voice, crazy ear. I've always been a fan of Kimberell, and she did a sermon. I don't even know where the sermon was.
I saw it.
Yeah, you were there.
No, I saw the sermon.
I'm like,
YouTube.
Damn, you stayed here and listened to that shit.
You didn't get up and walk out.
No, that's when you put the finger up. You put the finger up. Dude.
Come on.
Really intense. She was just saying, you know, the gays are just, it's just wrong. If you're like looking at another woman's titties and you're a woman, that's just wrong. You're going to hell. Like,
not just wrong, perverted.
You're perverted. Said. And she said all the gays are going to die in 2017.
That's why I don't fuck with religion, man.
She did. You know, and that's a tough one. I'm a black dude who was raised in the Baptist church, then switched to Pentecostal. I was educated high school and college by the Jesuits. I was an atheist for a while in college because I was like, fuck religion. Fuck. I can't with this. I'm tired of dealing with the shame. I know who I am. And people who condemn me turn around and do other things that the Bible talks about not doing.
Oh, they do the same shit.
Hypocrisy.
They do the same thing.
Wait,
they just hide.
Literally the same thing.
Yeah. Right. They hide it.
They just don't have the balls to say that they're doing it and live out loud.
Exactly.
You know?
And it's in 27. We've come too far to still rely on that old school, Old Testament rhetoric and those few verses that condemn homosexuality and use that to justify our current homophobia and negative stances against LGBTQ community. It's insane. That's not the way to bring people to God or to Jesus. It's through love. It's through acceptance, not condemnation. And I don't know, Kim, like, it's tough for me to deal with the fact that she believes those things, preaches those things, and turns around and gets supported by and gets money from the gay community.
I'll tell you she ain't going to have no organ player anymore.
Well, she
has. Exactly.
You know Daryl
that played the organ. He's like, fuck this bitch.
Daryl.
They call him Daryl.
That's how my family says it.
There was a lot of backlash. She was actually scheduled to be on Ellen. Ellen canceled.
Yep.
Of course, Ellen's going to cancel.
Exactly.
going to cancel, but the church like is going to support her. Let's be real.
Mm. Oh, the church no, I agree. No. And this is,
and she's still going to get money.
She'll be fine. But this is also why it's okay for people like Ellen, for people like Pharrell to speak out against her, for people like Monique has spoken out against her. Janelle Monae has spoken out against her. She had a radio show canceled. She got dropped from a BMI concert that she was supposed to, I think, be honored at even.
You're talking about BMI, the publishing society?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Wow, they said, no, we can't.
Like, bitch,
we
you got to go to ASCAP or CSAP now.
You can't get one of those either.
We ain't collecting your money.
It's true.
But the gays are on all the boards, okay?
Listen, we're everywhere.
Everywhere. Come.
But, you know, listen, your words have meaning and you have to take responsibility for them. But, yeah, she'll be fine. So I'm not worried about her.
Now, question. Do you think somebody put her up to it, or do you think that's really in her heart?
I believe that's in her heart. Unfortunately, I really do. She said it. She preached it to a church and a congregation full of people.
But
and
I
I've
feel
heard
like being
sermons
in a black
like
church,
that.
She had to encounter homosexuals in a black church before and knew they were homosexuals. So where is it coming
what do you
from?
Think
they
that's
all
her
do.
Hair.
No, if you think about the choir director, the organist, the choir director and all that shit, and then you know John in the front row, he come with his friend to holiday events, you know? So I mean it's like something that's known in a black church. So I'm like, where is this coming from all of a sudden?
But listen, I've been to
especially she's from down south in the A, right? Atlanta?
I believe so.
Atlanta?
Yeah.
Atlanta.
Which is why it's time to stop that.
The gay TL.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's it.
You've been to Atlanta, right?
Yeah. Just once.
Roddy's like, and that's all I need to do. I'm still tired, bitches.
Rodney down there sending people back to their wife.
I'm in New York, okay?
Pharrell is like that up here, too?
Yeah. It's like that a little bit of everywhere.
Right, yeah.
Atlanta's known for that shit, though.
That's true.
Yeah, man.
Right. I mean, up here, there are lots. On the low.
And again, I think part of the responsibility for that widespread sort of DL culture, and especially the black community, part of the responsibility goes back to the black church and the rhetoric that they preach that makes people feel the shame and that they have to live that life. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And that's what needs to stop.
So now,
but I feel not to cut you off. I just feel like it's always like the black community. Let's be real; is very accepting of fucking damn near everything. But I don't understand why.
I don't necessarily agree with that.
Really?
Man, listen, I don't agree with that.
The black community is the huger acceptor of refugees I've ever seen in my life. If your community, if you're another ethnic group and you're not really like popping there, we'll take you in.
I feel like the
Do you
know
what I'm saying though?
I have a lot of family that involved in the church and you know either Baptist or you know I also have family that are black Muslims and I feel like from
Farrakhan
but
damn,
like
I know this.
But they're also like actually genetically half Jewish. It's a big mess. It's a mishigash. It's a lot that you know I got
that's
an interesting
Vakakta.
Family it's Vakakta for sure. But I feel like the black religious community is very very conservative.
Yes.
And that although they might and you might be the hairdresser and you might be like the person that they're like, hey, like, what do you think about this outfit? But when it comes down to like when they're in the pews and they're giving money in the church, it's just like, oh, no, this is an abomination. And I don't understand it really because I'm an agnostic. So, like, I've never been an atheist. I've always believed in a God, but I don't believe in religion. And I kind of feel like I don't want to believe in a God that creates a religion that people are hating other people that aren't doing anything wrong. You know what I mean? Like, if you're going to go outside in the street and molest a three-year-old, you should be cast aside. You're a pervert. But if you're loving somebody that you love, like, why should anybody question that? Like, love is love.
Yes.
If there's
we get
anything,
some applause for that.
Right. You know what I mean? I love agree. Is love. And so I think that as long as you're not hurting anybody, that's completely fine. But I also know that, you know, I have family members that think I'm gay because I know gay people. You know what I mean?
I know what you mean, but I feel like just as a whole, we take in like a lot of just lost tribe people.
I don't know. Well, because my dad's a pastor, so I grew up
just growing up in Chicago. Oh, wow. It's like we had like everybody in the neighborhood. It's like one Chinese dude that fucked up or something. And he moved over in the black neighborhood. Like, hey Tim, whatever.
It's like that with certain things.
You know what I'm saying? Like we just took motherfuckers here.
I feel like the subject of homosexuality in the black church and the black community has always been taboo. Yes. It's always been something that like has been shunned and swept under the rug for like a long time.
But see, we knew who it was.
Like, it's 2016, and you would think somebody like Kim Burrell that has a platform that's been there's gay people all over the church, like in the community for so long. We can get married now. There's like you would think that the thinking would be progressive,
mm-hmm.
yeah. and mm-hmm. to have Absolutely. Her get up there and be,
she's in Atlanta,
right?
Right,
because there's understanding that it happens, and that there are people who are gay in your church, but then there's also and tolerating it. There's a difference between tolerating it as opposed to accepting it, understanding it, and accepting it as normal, and accepting gay people as full humans who deserve love, the same kind of love that everybody else does. Exactly. You know, there's a difference I think between tolerating and accepting fully.
And accept.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah.
And that's the thing that I don't understand is that, and I guess this is kind of my reason why I've never really been pro-religion, is that if you can have a doctrine of, you know, treat other people as you'd have them treat you, but then you want to go and exclude an entire segment of society just because they love somebody that you don't think that they should love, but like, how do you want to serve that kind of God? Like, you know what I mean? It's like, that's to me, like, that's not godly.
The rhetoric never matches, you know what I mean? The ethic of religious people. And that's why I can't fuck with it, ever.
That is an amazing point, actually.
Exactly.
That's why I couldn't deal with it. I'm like, it's just, it never matches up. So I'm like, fuck it. But gangbangers, it does. They say, I'm dying for Crips and Blood. They fucking die for that shit. That's why gangs are more prevalent in the black community than religion is.
I don't agree with that.
Shit.
You think so?
Yeah, man. These young motherfuckers will die for that Crip and Blood shit, right? But who's dying for Jesus? Riddle me that.
I don't even know what.
All right, I'm just dropping the mic. Drop it.
Talk to me now. Talk to me.
Well,
amazing.
I'm just going to say that it depends on the age demographic, because I don't think that any church grandmama is going to be dying for any Crips or Blood, but they would die for their Lord and Savior.
Exactly. No, they probably die for a car, for that wig that they had for 20 years, but they ain't fucking dying for Jesus. Let's be real.
Well, I mean, it's a good thing that we don't have to in our country, you know.
Are they Jehovah's Witness?
Freedom of religion.
Because if they're a Jehovah's Witness, they're not going to get the cancer treatment, and then they will die for Jesus.
Well, Jehovah's Witness die to get in your house.
Wow.
I'm going to shoot you don't get away from my door. No, just read it. Just read it.
Why are you going to be at my house at 8 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday?
That's why I'm glad I
know you're home.
Because
they know you're home.
Fuck us back. That's just unnatural to be up that early on a Saturday. Or as old black people say, a Saturday. On a Saturday. Where are you from?
I'm from Toledo, Ohio.
Okay, you're the Midwest. That's why I was like, on a Saturday. You know what it is.
My name is Kevin. Kevin.
Where my cousin Daryl at?
Daryl. I got a cousin Daryl. That's how they say it. Shout out to Daryl Brown, DB, doing his thing with Kanye.
Is Daryl Brown coming over on Saturday?
So, Kevin, it's 6:35. I know you had to start getting out of here.
Yes.
Yeah. But before you go, where can everyone catch your shows? Again, hit us with your Twitter, Instagram, Facebook handles.
Absolutely. Come see Kinky Boots on Broadway, 8 shows a week. March 5th, Todrick Hall is amazing. Come check him out. You can get tickets on Ticketmaster or even through the Kinky Boots website, kinkyboots, the musical.com. My Twitter is K. Smith Kirkwood. Instagram and Facebook are both Kevin Smith Kirkwood. Check out my website, www.kevinsmithkirkwood.com, for updates. I'm very soon, very shortly, going to be announcing the next New York City Whitney Houston dates. Okay. Also, you can check out the Joe's Pub at the Public Theater website, because they'll be announcing dates soon.
Awesome. Yeah. All right, check Kevin, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. A pleasure.
Amazing to meet you, and great luck with Kinky Boots. And we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. Stay tuned.
Baby, I'm playing on you tonight. Hunt you down, eat you alive. Just like animals, animals, like animals most. Maybe you think that you can hide. I can smell your scent for miles. Just like animals, animals, like animals most. Baby, I'm so won't you try to do to me? It's like we can't stop, we're enemies.
Welcome back to Big Talkin' Brewskies. I'm still Marissa Smith. We've got Jason Cross with us.
Yes, yes.
We've got Jose Alvarez with us.
Hi.
And we've got Bible Girl with us.
Hey.
So, Jose, how was your week?
Long. Just working a lot. It's very busy season for us right now. And last night I went out till really late with Bible Girl, actually. So,
oh, where'd you go?
We went to Macri Park. Bible Girl was hosting a charity party there. It's a monthly party.
Oh, awesome.
It was our first one.
Yeah,
the turnout was really cool. It was
so
awesome.
What's the charity for?
So every month it's a different platform for different marginalized communities due to the ongoing and even like beyond and before Donald Trump and all of that BS. It's just kind of like anyone that's been marginalized or oppressed. And
right.
So last night we were specifically doing the, it's called QDEP. And okay. It's an organization that it stands for Queer Detainee Empowerment Project.
Okay.
And so it's just for helping to benefit those who have been incarcerated, who are queer, LGBTQ identifying in general, who just kind of need help getting back on their feet and getting back on right track and stuff. So that was the first one. Next month we're doing a focus on Black History Month, Black Lives Matter, bringing in New York City Shut It Down, just to kind of keep the morale going. The whole point is just we wanted to focus on mobilization because that's so important.
Especially right now.
Uh-huh. And that's the only way change is going to happen. I mean, Obama said it himself in the farewell address. You know, it's
right,
just
put
like,
your boots on.
Strap them up, man. And we're going to do it. We're doing it. We did amazing last night. It was awesome. It was empowering. It felt awesome.
Yeah.
It was really
cool.
No,
that's awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah. So now, like, what kind of show was it?
Lip syncing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, being irreverent, stupid drag queens, and just kind of same stuff that we always do.
Do you have an artist you gravitate to that you lip sync more?
Brittany.
Oh, okay, God. That's your one.
Don't get me started, though, because I'll take up the whole goddamn
Get started. Come on, I want to know. What's your Brittany song?
And Iggy.
Oh,
sometimes I run.
You always
do
Iggy.
Sometimes. I like Iggy ironically.
Yeah.
There's an ironic love for Iggy Azalea. But my right now, my fave Britney song, it's on her new album. Well, Make Me. I mean, it's really good. It's with G-Eazy. He's pretty lame, but the song itself is pretty good. Like, I like the production value of it a lot. Her new album's really great.
So, other than, pulling together the whole fundraiser, how was your week, Bible?
I wish I could tell you. It's been a blur. It's been great. I'm recently free from an office job. I was doing graphic design as a day job.
Okay.
And 9 to 6 office hours is not my passion. So eventually I was just
welcome
like...
Welcome to the club.
Yeah.
You're at home.
I was like 6 months into doing it. I gave it my best shot, but it was kind of time. I've been doing drag for 3 years now, and I've known that my passion really lies in pursuing that and doing side projects that align with it. And being in this office job, it was really kind of taking up everything. Like, I couldn't go grocery shopping. I couldn't clean my apartment, let alone get anything else I wanted to, like, work-wise for this stuff finished or completed. So my week has really kind of culminated in just doing laundry, going grocery shopping. It's been great. I love being a housewife.
So now... Jose, you and Bible have been a part of a project recently, Killer Unicorn. It's a film. Did you write it or?
I wrote it and I'm the producer of it, yes.
Amazing. So what is it about?
It's a queer campy horror film. The way I always describe it is Wes Craven meets John Waters. Mm. It's pretty irreverent and fun and very, very dark and gory. So it's about this very hunky... guy in a unicorn mask who's going around killing queer Brooklyn nightlife people and drag queens in very, very gruesome ways.
Okay.
How'd you come up with that idea?
It's really dumb, actually.
Say it.
I think
it like it's hot.
I think it was actually at one of Bible's parties a long time ago at Eastern Block, and I saw someone wearing a unicorn mask, and I really liked the dumb flimsy unicorn mask, so I went and bought one on Amazon, and I saw a rubber pink gun on it as well, so I bought it, and then I took a picture with it for Instagram, just like ironic and dumb. Mm-hmm. And I was like, how do I title this? What's a good caption for this? Like, oh, this would be a cute movie, Killer Unicorn. And then our old title was Killer Unicorns from Anusburg. Because I live in Williamsburg and I call it Anusburg. So I was just like, oh,
that's
this
what
is
they
a-
call Williamsburg now.
Well, that's what I call it.
Might as well call it Anusburg.
Right?
Stage
it's
why
a shit show.
Because
it's a shit show.
It's a shit show, really?
So and then from the caption, I started thinking, like, oh, I actually kind of do want to write this movie.
Yeah.
Let's not make it a caption. Let's make it a real thing. And
is this your first feature you wrote?
Yes. So I come from theater. I mostly produce Broadway shows, and I am a theater writer, a playwright. So going, transitioning into film was hard. I'm not used to not having as much power on the product. In film, you have to relinquish a lot of the power, whereas in theater, you kind of have a more specific vision of what you want. So that was really hard.
What are the biggest differences between the two? Because when you say you're, like, in film, you're relinquishing your power, like, what power did you feel like you were relinquishing?
Well, the main difference is that I see things on a stage rather than through a camera lens. So it was hard for me to convey the vision that I wanted for the movie without, you know, overpowering a director and saying, like, this is exactly what I want, just come in and do it.
Right.
But, you know, and so allowing the director to have the artistic freedom to just kind of, like, take it away from me and interpret it.
Right.
So that's what I mean, yeah.
Okay.
But I'm working with a great director. His name is Drew Bolton, and he is amazing. Can we swear?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Fuck this, shit, yeah. Motherfucker, cocksucker.
Thank fucking God.
He's fucking amazing. yeah, he's fucking amazing. So we get along super well, and we work really, really well together. So I'm very happy to be working with
him. Yeah, that's awesome.
Drew's really rad. I had only met him for the first time when we were doing our initial blocking out for the first couple of scenes that we had shot. And he's just super chill and vibey and knows how to convey exactly what is being called for. And he's not, what is the right word? He's not like a dictator, you know, he's hands-on. He wants everyone to be comfortable. He can see when something isn't like totally solid yet. And he goes, you know, it's fine. Let's just redo it. And it's not like an impatience factor. He's very... As Jose is, they're nurturing what they want to, right. You know, to reap the benefit of it. Yeah. So it's nice to see people who are committing to the craft, but not for just the sake of that, but because it's the passion and they know that they'll get so much more out of it if they're really holding true to what they love, you know?
Yeah, no, that's awesome.
Mm, yeah.
So now I'm assuming that you're part of this project. Who are you in the film?
I play Jess Jizz. And she, I don't know, what am I allowed to give? I mean, we've shown plenty, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Don't give it away. Make them pay this
We've
year.
Shown a lot, and we've gotten fan art from her death scene.
We do have fan art.
Yeah, which is really cute.
Fan art already?
Hell yeah.
Yeah, from her death scene. Yeah.
Well, how'd you die? And then now I'm curious.
Yeah, we won't give it away.
We won't? Yeah.
You can kind of see it.
It's
yeah.
It's gruesome.
It's a gruesome death.
Yeah.
So, we're talking about your character.
Sure.
So, now, who are you?
Jess Jizz is a cocaine fiend, sex pot, slut bag, with a heart of gold.
Okay.
Yeah. That's. I think that's the best way. She's very endearing. It was an interesting character to really soak into. It's my first real acting role, actually. So,
okay.
Yeah, it was quite a jump in. into doing something.
Was it hard for you to get into character?
Oh, no.
One of the first things we shot was her blowing the killer, and she just dove right
into it. She was like,
Brooklyn's going to have so much on me for years to come.
It's right? We had to actually dim the gag noises she was making.
Really? Yeah. That was the first thing. So I was like, hey, you never act before. Act like
what was the first thing up. The second day?
Oh, the first day. Okay.
Rail some lines for us. Sure!
Oh, yeah. The first scene is actually her doing
a lot of coke.
The first scene is just her cutting up lines and lines and doing a lot of that.
A lot of
so,
yeah. How do they fake that in movies? I always wonder.
It was amazing how they did it.
No, it wasn't real.
It wasn't real. No, it was the
it
good
was
shit.
Not real.
Yeah, no, not at all.
It was not a Colombian special.
I didn't really know how they did it beforehand. What was it, like coconut milk powder?
It was milk powder with Vaseline. Uh-huh. So she did it out of a rolled up dollar. So you put Vaseline inside the dollar.
And it catches the powder.
So it catches the powder, but she still gets some inside so that like she actually can get a reaction from it. Mm-hmm.
There is placebo effect. For
yeah.
Sure.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. I was like, ugh.
You get the grind.
No grinding, but I felt very heady. I think that, I don't know. I don't know what that
is. How do you know what that feels like, though? I'm sorry. Coming for my own.
Put me on blast a little bit. Why don't you?
Well, Bible did a lot of research before the role.
I did. You know, field research.
She's exactly. a method actor.
That's what I exactly. like
to hear. You have to get in character.
You got Jason's jaw going.
You say Coke, I'm like, that's the first
like
reaction.
That and like two packs of cigarettes, right? You're like,
oh my god, yeah.
It's my, yeah, I won't go into it.
Cigarette. Yeah. Never smoked before.
Stay that way.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm always quitting.
Oh, no one likes a quitter. I never quit.
No? How do you try to quit, though? Do you just go
turkey? I go cold turkey, or I smoke a lot of pot.
Oh.
Okay. Which isn't such a terrible trade-off.
Does it help?
Yeah.
Help you
stop Yeah, I mean, I also, like, I used to be, like, a chronic pack buyer, and I don't really, I couldn't tell you the last time I, like, went out of my way. Actually, yes, I could. I was in Salt Lake City, like, a few weeks ago, and they're, like, $6 a pack there, and yeah. I couldn't resist. But, like, that was vacation. Yeah, otherwise,
yeah.
I don't
economics.
Really.
Economics.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah
you know.
Economics, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, I've been smoking probably since I was, like, 12, on and off, and, like, I've stopped, I mean, I'd probably say, like, the longest since I was 12 that I stopped is probably, like, in a year and a half or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I've had a couple of, like, tonsil operations, so I had to stop then.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so, but, like, I feel like it's the second that I'm like, oh, I'm not going to bust a suture. Like, you know what I mean?
I mean, I've totally been there. I know that feeling where it's, like, I've gotten, like, bad head colds or whatever, and I'm just like hacking out my lungs, and it's like I haven't coughed today, and then you go for the tobacco, and then it's game over all over again.
Yeah, it's I don't know, because like I've never been like a drug person, no like you know judgments or whatever, but I've never done like coke or anything like that, but like I think it's mainly because like I know how many cigarettes that I've smoked, like you know what I mean. It's just like you should not touch coke. Do you know how long you've been smoking?
Insult
like,
to injury. Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah.
It's just like, no, like,
it
Molly,
could grab a
no.
hold of you.
It's just like, do not trust yourself. That little voice in your head is the devil.
Mm-hmm. It really is. And I mean, I give into it.
It's like,
what are we talking
we all
about?
Do, we all cigarette? Do to a certain degree.
Everything.
It's all about moderation, though.
Yeah.
If you're able to walk away from it when you want to walk away from it.
Yeah.
I think that's like a trained thing. I think you kind of have to build that mentality up a little bit, because I've definitely been able to kind of step back from specific situations and be like, maybe not tonight. Maybe I don't want to smoke a cigarette tonight, and I can back away. See, it's hard.
I have an unlimited amount of cigarettes.
I
really
company?
Do, which is that's why it's so hard for me to quit. I'm actually Colombian, born and raised.
Okay.
Oh.
So my mom still lives down there. And
what part of Colombia?
Medellin.
Oh, okay. Really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So, oh, okay. Yeah.
We're,
I know
we're,
a lot about Medellin. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. People often think they do.
I know a couple of Sicarios that came up here after they left there.
Oh.
Yeah.
No, it's really cool. I love it. I rarely get to go. But my mom still lives there. So every time she visits me, she, you know, goes and buys me like Colombian stuff to bring me. And the first thing she always says is, I got you 10 cartons of cigarettes and 6 bottles of rum. What else do you want?
Oh, shit. Oh,
you're like,
okay,
20
so
cartons of cigarettes.
I literally have about 16 cartons of cigarettes in my apartment. It looks like a bodega.
What's the brand on those?
Marlboro Lights.
Marlboro Lights.
She knows that's what I smoke, so that's what she brings me.
Yeah.
And then since they're like $2 a pop down there, like less than that, I usually
damn, for
like,
a pack?
Yeah.
$2?
Yeah, so I have a friend that like I sell them cartons for, so it's like, I make a little,
make
you know,
a little
cash, a little drink in cash.
What is it, like $20 a pack here, 16?
16, no.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Well, in the city, because like, I'm a Westchester girl, but it's like 10 up there. Yeah.
Pretty high.
That's crazy.
I remember the first pack of cigarettes I ever bought was like $4.50.
The good old days.
Yeah.
The golden years.
You know, and a gallon of gas was 97 cents.
Like, I remember those days.
I'm an old bitch.
I remember those days, too. I remember when it broke a dollar and everybody
was like,
upset.
Whoa.
Like, how the
whoa.
Fuck is gas
and now
a
it's
dollar?
Like, it's almost like $4 and you're like, all right.
Yeah,
like,
we're just complacent at this point. Like, it is what it is.
It's just like, I remember it's like coffee, like you, like your parents would send you like the corner store to get a coffee and give you like 50 cents. And you're like, now you're just like, you literally want like $6 for this coffee?
Yeah.
I really can't get over how expensive the coffee is here. It's so.
Where are you from originally?
Long Island. I've kind of bopped around when I was like a kid, but really kind of had my main stakeout in Long Island. My parents are from there, and I finished out high school there. And then I moved here in 2011 for school. I went to FIT for fashion design.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And it all went downhill from there, and here we are. Just kidding. You guys,
I think
aren't
New York
downhill.
Helps you find yourself.
Yeah.
Like, being in Manhattan, I could really say it helped me find myself.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah.
This is just the place to be.
Like, I've never lived here, so, like, I've always been kind of from Westchester, so, like, you know, a
You've
suburb
been here a lot,
that...
though, no?
But, yeah, no, like, I come here very often. I've been down here very often, mm-hmm. you know, back to aging myself. But, like, I used to be, like, in the late 90s, I was, like, a club kid. I used to hang out in, like, the Tunnel and the Limelight and, you know.
Is that when I got Alec was there? Alec? I can't think of his name, but he chopped somebody's body up and he just
Michael
out.
Michael Alec.
Yeah. What's his name? Michael Alec?
Good old Michael Alec.
He's back out. He throws parties.
Oh, she's around. Yeah. We see her around.
Really?
Really? I've shaken Michael Alec's hand and it's very weird. It's a very odd.
Well, someone invited me to one of his parties.
He just got out of probation.
He
just got out of probation, so he threw a finally free party because he couldn't throw parties while he was in probation. So where did they throw that? I forgot. It was a while ago.
It was Love Gun, and then didn't Love Gun get shut
down? No, this one happened like a couple weeks ago, or like a month ago.
See, it's 2017. Why are we glamorizing Michael Alec still?
I
don't understand it.
I think that's everyone's
the rap syndrome.
I will
kill
tell
somebody
you this
you know?
Right now.
I guess.
He put Drano in his body.
And he dismembered it.
Yeah, well, he didn't. Then he like beat him and put Drano in and he chopped him up and threw his body in the water.
Yeah,
he was knocked unconscious and then he literally siphoned Drano into his body. It's
and that's
like,
what killed him.
Yeah.
Damn.
If that didn't, the dismemberment sure did. So,
does he still get love?
Chicken or the egg?
Oh, people love him.
There's definitely like a division.
I think I guess love might not be the right word. I would say it's maybe like more so of like
a curiosity.
I would say there's like a party... cult curiity more
right.
so.
Yes.
Okay.
But his parties still sell out though.
The last one that I know that he tried to do.
I think
kind of closed the club.
Yeah,
the club that threw it like closed down a couple weeks later.
That's the aforementioned one that I name dropped, right?
Yeah,
I don't want to make people angry. But
yeah, I don't want to make people angry either because
fuck it, we're live. We'll do it live. it was at this bar called Love Gun, which RIP. It was a great bar. I mean, it was super cool. Nothing else was like it, especially out in Brooklyn. And I had hosted a party there, not this past Halloween, so two Halloweens ago, and I vaguely remember him walking in, and this is after I had met him. I met him like 3 years ago, unfortunately, but
just don't piss him off.
Yeah, just kind of stay away. Make sure all like under the sink products are away from him at all times.
Don't be in a private area.
No Clorox for him.
Just keep him at arm's length.
Yeah. He had done some after Halloween at that. He had come in on that night, and I happened to like be leaving anyway. I was like, perfect timing. And then that was the last time I was ever actually at Love Gun, and the last I had heard, like you said, was that party that he had hosted. And then, lo and behold, Love Gun got the wah-wah, and that plug pulled real quick.
Yeah.
Sad.
I don't know. Coming from an old person, I think that the love for that time was just that clubs now are just nothing. Like, I just kind of feel like...
So adorable.
You know what I mean? Totally. It's just like, I remember because, like, I used to go to, like, I was chalking my ID at lunch and I spent the whole week putting my outfit together.
You have to
and
explain what chalk and ID means.
I know exactly what it is.
I've done it back in like, the old New York license.
Yeah,
I know.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So it's like, okay, so like when you're chalking your ID back in the day, you used colored pencil and chalk and you would change the date on your ID. It's past the statute of limitations. Allegedly, I did that. but so, and I would go and I'd prepare and then like the whole week I'd spend the entire week. Back then my club name was Swiss Miss because it was hot chocolate.
Oh
and
yes.
You know what I mean? So like I'd put my whole outfit together and I was going into the fucking like Home Depot and getting like friggin' lawn fucking shit to make a dress out of fucking grass and like, you know what I mean? I like,
yeah, so you're like OG club kid shit.
Exactly. Yeah. So like now I walk into a club and it's like, okay, there's J. Crew guy, there's Armani Exchange guy, there's Sean John guy.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
And it's just like, okay, so then there's BB bitch, there's Gap bitch, there's Banana Republic bitch.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm standing there like, why am I not dead? Like, you know,
I get it.
You know what I mean? I remember like the first club I ever went to was mm-hmm. Limelight. It was RuPaul's birthday.
Holy
and
shit.
Can I tell you, like, line four blocks long, and I'm like 15, and like you're going into RuPaul's birthday, and now I walk into a club and it's just like, oh, so it's like $300 for a bottle. Do you want
you
a
have
table?
To buy a table, yeah.
Like, ugh. You know, and yeah. I'm just like, ugh. Like when I was like 15, like. These people wouldn't even have been on this line because they knew they wouldn't have been able to get in.
Mm.
And you know what yeah. I mean?
Well, club culture changes so fast. It's really strange. A few years ago, back when I had first moved to the city, so I was like 17, I had gone into doing like table hosting and club promoting, if you will, in like the meatpacking district. So I was doing like Avenue on 17th and 10th, PhD at Dream Hotel on 16th and 9th, just all these whole umbrella of that company that had all
the
those different venues,
all that.
Yeah. I would host and it was kind of how you would expect it to be for like bringing in people and it was fun and super vibey and chill. I mean, it did have those aspects like you were saying, but I haven't worked that industry in maybe 2.5-3 years now, and I've since gone back to these venues, and even since then the demographic of who's going, it's shifted. I don't want to use the term bridge and tunnel, but that's the term that comes to mind. It's like you said, the people who would have never even been waiting in line, now they're inside, and they don't even seem to understand how club etiquette is per
right.
se. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it's just
like
it's a
different
world.
They got Daddy's Amex Black and they're going to buy a bottle.
There's a bunch of trust fund
it.
Babies.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
They wouldn't even like let
yeah.
them in.
I mean, there was
the
natural
clubs.
Selection and like
pretty much.
Well, it was about like the hustle at the club. That was what was cool.
You know, because like I remember in the tunnel, they like there was like the whole like the jungle room. And they used to have it was pretty much like the LGBT parties. And so like you could go in that side for like much cheaper than going to general admission. And like, so like we were poor and we were in high school. And so like we'd go in the LGBT side. And like I was friends with a bunch of like drag queens. I mean, drag queens taught me how to do makeup when I was like 15. And so, and they kept me safe in the club. So like, you know, it's like, and now it's like you go in and I'm just like, ugh. Like, why am I here? And it's such a different I won't even say that it's like a different vocabulary of like, you know, who has club etiquette and who doesn't. Mm-hmm. But I feel like it's more of like gravity and without gravity. It's just kind mm-hmm. of like when we used to go, like it was a lifestyle for us. Like, we put effort and time into it. It wasn't like, oh, well, you know, I'm just going to steal my parents' credit card and I'm just going to go out to the city tonight. You
sit
know
in a corner,
mean?
Not talk to anybody.
Yeah.
Right.
And it was like, and it was one of those things where, like, because I wasn't popular in high school. I was one of the weird art kids. And all, like, the cheerleaders, like, they'd be out in the tunnel on, like, a Friday or Saturday night in the mainstream line, and we'd be on the curfew line. Mm-hmm. And like they'd be like looking over to us, it's just like Marissa, and it's just like, oh, you don't know who I am, like Monday through Thursday, bye bitch, like, you know what mm-hmm. I mean? And it's like, and we'd get in and they'd be standing there, and it's just like, and there was like an ambiance and a presence and an artisticness and a showmanship of the entire thing, and now it's just like
it's dead.
It's just like, oh, I'm gonna do coke in a bathroom.
Well, it's become weirdly elitist almost in a strange way, where it's like, as opposed to what you were saying, where it was very like, you know, your demographic of artsier people kind of coming together. I feel like club kid culture has almost taken a turn nowadays where it's become cliquey but it's the kids who were facing adversity in high school or whatever, and now it's almost like the tables have turned.
It's all the frat boys.
Yeah.
And it's disgusting. There's a bunch
of trust fund kids that I see now.
Well, the club culture in Brooklyn, I think, has a lot of that artisticness that you're talking about.
Totally.
Because, like, the people that we hang out with and the parties that we go to, like the weird warehouse parties that just happen.
Mm-hmm. They're in the Burg?
Mostly Bushwick and Ridgewood. Yeah. All these parties have the artistic level, and like they put on full productions that are like incredible, and like there's that kind of you wouldn't see anyone from like wearing Club Monaco there.
Right. For sure. I mean, even at like our like mom and pop bars that we have shows at, like where we were last night, I mean, that was still, like you're saying, like it's very art.
Mm-hmm.
If me lip syncing to Britney Spears is art, more art oriented rather than, again, like you said, like someone, you know, walking in, someone's wearing
some bitch
fucking
walking
BB.
In there, fucking Banana Republic. It just makes me want to slip my wrist.
I don't think there was one Banana Republic brand in there last night. I can tell you that right now.
Yeah.
But it's a completely like different situation. Mm-hmm. And you know, when clubs back then were like so massive, and now it's like people are just like, oh, well, you know, like what is that? Like everyone keeps telling me there's like one mega club left in the city, and they're like,
there's still a couple ones that are pretty big. Yeah. Like your Lavo is a decent size. Marquee's still around.
Marquee's still alive?
Yeah.
Marquee, well, because they had redone Marquee, because I was at Marquee. I used to promote at Marquee after they had reopened, after they had done the whole, they like literally gutted the entire interior.
I haven't been in Marquee in years.
The first time I went was like maybe a month or so before it had gone back under construction.
Okay.
And the whole vibe changed. It went from being like more of a hip hop vibe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To then it switched over and then became that really weird BB crowd. Like, I keep going back to BB because that was definitely
it's just like, bitch,
brand.
That was on BB's clearance.
It was
website
in the fucking window, bitch.
Ago.
Like,
what
know?
Are you doing?
Do people still go to Marquee, though?
Yes. Yeah, because promoter culture is still so prevalent because of the colleges in New York.
And they email their friends and then sells out.
That's how I got looped into it.
The last time I went to Marquee, Webster grabbed my ass.
Oh. Emmanuel Lewis?
Yes. Yeah. So I'm like walking through the crowd and like I'm about to go like upstairs.
Yeah, but he's still alive.
Like,
no, that's Gary Coleman is dead.
Gary Coleman is dead. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if Webster's still alive, but back when it happened, Webster was alive. So like, you know, like, cause like the old way that Marquee was set up, like you come through the doors, they have that like the bar on the back wall, mm-hmm. and then they've got like all the seats in the
dance
floor.
It was like the recess seating, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And then there's like a stairs that goes to the upstairs, mm-hmm. and then there's like the VIP that goes like straight next to the bathrooms. Mm-hmm. So like I'm walking and I'm trying to go upstairs to meet my friends. I'm walking through the crowd. All of a sudden I feel like somebody grabbed my ass, and I turn around and I look and I don't see anybody. And I'm like, what the fuck? And I keep going. And like then I feel someone grab my ass again. And I'm looking and I don't see anybody. And so I keep walking. And then all of a sudden I just feel like this poking in the middle of my back. I'm like, what the fuck?
What?
And so like I turn around and then like a slap on my ass like, hey, hey, hey. And I look down and it's fucking Webster. And he's like.
Oh my God.
And I was just like.
Oh, good time.
Oh.
You're like, right. You're lucky it was you.
I was just like, ah. Who let you out of the elevator? But Marquee. I mean, I've spent many a night, many a blackout in Marquee.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Me too.
Yeah,
me too.
I think I've only been once.
I mean, the new one is very pretty.
Really? I feel compelled to go, but at the same time.
You don't
want to
go.
You're not missing anything.
I feel
trust
like
me.
If I went, I'm going to want to like stab a bitch.
You
I
will.
Don't know.
You're one. You're a Google search away from seeing everything you need to see.
Yeah. Like,
I like a
hold on to your
it's
memories.
It's like, what do the young kids do these days?
Nothing. They stand there, they drink, they talk bullshit.
And half
no
the
one
night
dances.
They're just like outside waiting to get in, waiting for the promoter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's no the whole dances. Gimmick. It's the promoter thing now. It's like everyone wants to get in for free, so they're not paying a couple hundo or a couple grand for a table.
Right.
And then you're getting the bottle shelf liquor that's siphoned into a gigantic bottle
and
of
get
goose.
One bottle for like 12 people. Yeah. So you get like a sip.
And then, well, then you'll also, you'll occasionally get like the snaky promoter who will like, give you all of these like beautifully like false promises, and it's just like, I promise, like the bottle's coming, and
it's like 10 hours
it
later
it never shows up. Yeah. That was one of the reasons why I went into promoting, was because it was like, man, fuck this. I had this really nasty promoter who would like cut me out of the group because I like wasn't good enough anymore. It was like so, it was just so like mean girlsy, you know. It was like, well, you say I can't do it or I can't go with you, watch me outdo you, girl. And then I went into it and I was like, I'll never be a shitty promoter. And that was like my vow. Yeah, was like, hold on to my word and my promises. And like, I said there's going to be a bottle, so there's going to be a bottle.
You're a promoter for the people.
Of course.
Yes.
The people's promoter.
Yes.
That's what I do. That was my my foundation.
And you went from that to jizz.
Yeah.
Great.
Blowjobs and lines.
I don't think there's much.
Not much of a difference.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Well, actually, yeah. Like I was saying, like Brooklyn club culture. Like we do have a lot of that, and we celebrate the weirdos. Mm-hmm. That's what really it's all about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean,
have you been out in Brooklyn?
I mean, I go to Brooklyn now and then, but like I live in Westchester, so that's like a 2-hour commute, and I'm just not that committed.
Yeah, I was gonna say that's a commitment.
Yeah. Well, there's an awesome festival called Bushwig, and it's a 3-day festival that our friend Horchata, who's actually in the movie as well, she created it, and it's a music and drag festival for 3 days, and it's like all the really cool and weird drag queens doing awesome, really well produced numbers.
Fun. It's on like is it international spectrum yet, or would we say it's more nationally based?
Well, they went to Berlin, but
I mean like who's coming to it when it's the New York based Bushwig. Because I mean this year's scale of it. Which one was this one? Was this the third?
Was it the fifth? I think it's the fifth year.
It might have been the fifth. Oh, regardless, wow. It's been going on for a couple of years, but it's grown exponentially with each year that's come on.
Right.
And it's crazy. Like the faces that you see, and the beauty of social media, especially with like nightlife and what we work within, is like you get to get a scope of the scene that's outside of where we live. And then what's great about Bushwig is that you can then start placing these faces in real life to like these people and personalities online.
Yeah.
It's really, really interesting to see how that dichotomy really starts to like blend together. I mean, yeah. Horchata really had her thumb on the pulse with that one. It's really, really cool.
And what time of year is it, or when is it?
September. It's like early September, right?
Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm expecting both of you to invite me.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, we will.
Sure, girl. Yeah. I got you in my inbox.
All right. We got it. You do not want to see me on Red Bull and Vodka.
I think I want to see you on Red Bull and Vodka.
Yeah, you probably do. I'm a fun gal.
We'll get along just
fine. It's a super fun day. Like, it's edibles all day and just like drinking and just like laying in the sun and watching weird.
Yes. Yeah. Well, you got Jason. See, I don't even do like literally like just give me Red Bull and vodka.
I do an edible. If
I could have a preference, I would like strictly go cold turkey on even like smoking pot if I had the option to just go straight edible.
It's the best thing in the world.
It's so nice and easy.
I've done it once and it's not like. So, but I did it probably in a bad environment.
You gotta be in a good, chill, fun place.
Because I was
place.
In, like, your Woodstock 99. Yeah. Like,
or at the beach.
Yeah, true.
I love sand, just gets my OCD up. Like, it's
that's my favorite thing, going to the beach and getting stoned, like a Reese Beach.
I hate sand.
You hate sand?
It gets in every fucking thing. It's just like you get in your flip flops, you get in your swimsuit. It's just like I'm like scooping sand out underneath my boob. I hate it.
Same.
It's like sand. It's a pain in the ass. Mm-hmm.
And the water's never actually usually super warm either.
No.
I love cold water.
I don't mind cold
in
water.
The shower.
But it's like
I
if
love
I'm at the beach,
cold water.
I don't want to like be confronted with any cold temperature of any sort, you know. It's
But I feel like the environment has a thing against me because every time I try to go in the ocean, I either see like a used condom or a turd, and I'm just like,
oh my gosh, what beach do you go to?
Eastern Orchard Walk. And Jones.
Sorry, Darren.
Sorry about it.
I'll never get booked there again.
Never. Don't step foot in here, you tot.
Oh, but, my God.
No, I'll but, like, literally, I go into the ocean, and it's always just, like, some curled up used condom or some, like, turled up turd, and I'm just like, why am I in here?
Yeah, you gotta go.
Yeah. Actually, you gotta bounce. I would hop out quick.
No. Yeah, I can't.
Quicker than quick, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, I cannot.
So get that Hep C quick.
They do have a cure now.
Yeah, they do.
I saw a commercial for it on TV the other day.
Is it a cure or a vaccine?
They said cure. They said, and really? It can be cured, was the concluding line. I think, well, didn't Pam Anderson have Hep C?
Yeah.
I think she's...
Her
she's
and been, Tommy Lee, I think.
Yeah, I think Pammy got cleared.
Oh.
Wow.
Yeah.
Good for her.
Yeah.
You know, I guess...
Yay for her liver.
Yeah.
I guess she just can't go back to the beach and risk getting it again, I guess.
Not the beach y'all going to.
No ocean turds.
Shit like that in my life. Damn. Where's Orchard Beach? So I know not to
That's
go there.
That's in the Bronx. It's by City Island.
Wow,
Cho-Cha Beach.
Cho-Cha Beach. That's all you have to say. I got it. Cho-Cha Beach.
Draw the line.
It's Cho-Cha Beach. Now, we heard a little bit about Bible's character in your film. Are you also in your film? Or
I am.
I
played the love interest of the lead character. So the movie revolves around this boy who, well, not boy, but a guy, who a year ago he had an, he had like a very traumatizing experience, and all his drag queen friends helped him and queer friends. But now he just refuses kind of to like go back to nightlife. He becomes a homebody and stops talking to people. But then he meets this boy named Puppy Pup. That's my
and
character.
You're Puppy Pup.
I'm a
pup.
Little pup. I'm a
pup.
Yeah, a little pup. Yeah, I like my dad used to call me pup.
Okay.
Yeah. So yeah, he meets me. So he's a little bit more inclined to go out with us this year. Because there's a big party happening in the movie called Brooklyn's Annual Enema Party, where you come get douched and dance.
Okay.
So you're encouraged to bring your own enema and clean your bowels and have fun.
Right. Yeah.
As you do.
We go there.
Yeah. So so my character convinces him to go to the party that year, and then the unicorn turns up and
wait, they have
wreaks
parties
havoc.
Where you give yourself an
enema? No, it's made up for the movie.
Oh, he wishes.
I'm sure there are sex parties, like enema sex parties, because people are into
there totally
that.
Are.
Yeah, I've had really? People like ask me if they could do that to me. Well, no, thank
really?
You. Yeah.
That's a new one for me.
Yeah.
Wow.
They're like, I hope you did it.
No.
Next
like,
time.
That's a little bit too much.
I'll hit you up next time.
Right?
Like, make it happen.
I'm fine with you knowing that I do it because, like, I have to get ready.
Of course.
Right.
You know? That's but life. I don't.
I'm ready for my close up.
Well, yeah.
What do you mean?
He's a bottom, so he gets
well,
ready.
I'm versatile, but.
Well,
he's a bottom.
Yeah. So, like.
So you have to prep before.
Hell yeah. I'm trying to explain it.
Yeah. You got to translate that shit.
Oh,
until the water runs clean. Yeah.
Jasmine up in this bitch over here.
You have to do it until the water runs clean. So.
That's considerate of you.
No. Yes. Well, yeah, because I also don't want to be embarrassed.
No, but women don't do that shit at all.
Oh, I don't
know.
I've
had some times where I thought I was at Orchard Beach.
No! Cho-Cha.
At Cho-Cha Beach, yeah.
No!
Oh, my God.
Cho-Cha ass exploded?
No! Once or twice, yeah.
Oh, my God.
It's human.
Yeah.
It's not pretty human, but it's human.
Well, there's actually a death like that in the movie.
It's like, what the fuck, human?
WTF, why is
that so like, yeah, I'm fine with you knowing that I do it, but like, I don't want to do it on you or like for you, you know? That's weird. I don't know. Not for me.
No.
Thank you, though.
Thanks, but no thanks.
Yeah. So actually, from someone asking me that, that's how I came up with the idea for the party in the movie. And then the unicorn comes, and then he wreaks havoc at the party and starts killing people in, like, pretty fucked up ways.
And it's just one unicorn.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And he scares like a party full of 20, 30 people?
No, this has like a couple hundred
people. Oh, does he catch
them
one by one?
He's lurking in the shadows in during the sex dungeon where the enemas are happening and like people are getting fisted and double penetrated.
You actually showed a fist in the enema?
No.
Oh, okay.
We can't show that, but there's this, but it's implied. You'll see. Mm-hmm. The movie comes out this fall, so you'll see what I mean. And I don't want to give out too much about that.
Yeah.
But it's my favorite scene, and it's the my favorite death scene in the movie, and it's the first one I wrote.
Is that Grayson's part, no?
I'm not going to say whose part it is.
Oh, I didn't know that. My bad. Well, I didn't give anything away.
It's all right. I'm pretty sure she's told everybody. but this person is on a sling waiting to be douched, because that's the point of the party. So he's just like, oh, come on, douche me, whatever. And the unicorn shows up, and since the unicorn is so hot.
What, you said douche?
Yeah.
So it's a woman.
No, it's a
douche are like synonymous.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So yeah.
And an enema is an ass douching, if you will.
Yeah.
Oh.
So okay. Yeah, the unicorn
more you know
comes
now
and
I
gives
know
him.
I'm just translating.
Right. Yeah. Yes. Fair enough.
That's totally so that's fine.
I don't see many strip people in my life, so
really?
I forget that straight people exist sometimes.
There's a few of us left.
Even the guy, you're outnumbered.
Even the guy at my bodega, like everybody. So he gives Grayson what I call an acid enema.
Oh, so
he starts douching him with acid, and all his inserts start falling out. And you can figure out the rest.
Yeah. Jose's a sick motherfucker.
I am
some
a little
of the
bit.
All the deaths in this entire film are like,
that's like Braveheart out your ass.
Yeah.
It's crazy. It's like
pretty much. Yeah.
It's like a really. If I had to draw a comparison.
Oh my God.
I feel it reminds me like a mix overall, like a campy like. Like Halloween with Michael Myers, but then blended with like Saw, because it's not trap based, but the way the murders are executed, it's very, there's like a lot of technicality to it, and like having to like really flesh it out. It's not like, oh, you're stabbed and you're dead. Like there's
more slow deaths. Like
yeah. It takes a little bit for
I can feel my ass burning.
Like, yeah. Hey, what the fuck? Some peppers in this?
Dude, it's Chipotle earlier.
That was a ghost pepper.
At that moment, you kind of just wish it was hemorrhoid.
Yeah.
If I wanted those, I would have given birth.
Push too hard. It happens.
It happens to everyone that has a child. Like, wait until
when
you're...
When they get a hemorrhoid?
I didn't know
wait
that.
Until you and your wife have a child, and your wife will tell you. It literally... Because it's the
Mary
gravity.
Mary probably has hemorrhoids already.
It's the gravity.
My fiance.
So it's like when you start, like, having those contractions, and, like, your whole body is, like, contracting and pushing things forward. As soon as you, like, literally give birth, you have hemorrhoids.
Really?
No, thank you.
Oh.
I have to ask my mother.
That.
She
yes.
has hemorrhoids.
Like, literally, every one of your moms has hemorrhoids.
I have to ask her.
Oh.
Yeah.
She told me she
your
used
mom
the
got hemorrhoids because
sorry,
of you.
Mom.
Yeah, sorry, Mom.
I mean, I have a lot of things to apologize.
But that.
But let's
that
start
is,
there.
Yeah.
Let's start from the beginning.
That's the concrete thing that you're apologizing for right
the
now.
Like, that's where
yeah.
it all
that's
started.
Where, yeah, I was going to say, it's the root of the problem.
Yeah, that's why she's mad.
I think that's you know, I
right?
It's like, I got hemorrhoids for us.
I think that's a damn. Lovely title for a memoir.
What?
I gave my mother hemorrhoids.
I gave my mom hemorrhoids.
I think it's sorry, Mom, for the hemorrhoids.
Right? Yeah, something like that. I like that. Ooh. Don't steal it.
Uh-oh. He's
thinking. I'm capitalizing.
He's coming up with part two. He's coming up with part two.
Yeah,
I think this
Bible
could be a collaboration. Like,
it's very fluid.
Yeah, you know, we're all like, you know, like workshopping. Okay, so this is going to be non-film related, but I'm assuming that you've both been watching the news.
Yes.
And,
yes.
You are aware of our current political climate. as artists and members of the LGBT community, like, what do you feel that this soon to be 8 days away?
Damn it.
Yeah. I know.
Isn't that, is it eight? No, yeah. It's seven.
Is it seven?
It's next Friday.
Don't.
Oh, yeah.
God.
It's oh, yeah, it is seven. You're
now,
right.
That's a movie for you.
That's
7 days to Trump.
That's a nightmare.
Yeah, God.
We should start shooting it right now. 7 days
seven
to Trump.
Let's go.
Trump. Okay. Get out your Facebook lives. all right. So
and then we'll
seven,
end it by giving him an enema.
I've been, I think, allegedly a Russian prostitute has already done that. but...
Oh, the water sports.
Somebody,
damn, crazy.
Somebody, I've gone asked before on Grindr as well if they could give me a piss enema. And I'm like, no, thank
whoa,
you.
Whoa, whoa, whoa,
I get
wait,
asked
wait,
a lot
whoa,
of
whoa,
weird
whoa,
stuff.
Whoa, 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 what's a piss enema?
Like, exactly what you
pee
think
inside
it
of
is.
You, and then...
They pee inside of you?
Yeah.
Oh, in your anus?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then they do the enema and get
no,
the pee
and
out?
Then they pull out and...
Oh, it drops
because,
out.
Yeah, because it's water. Damn. I mean, I've never done it. No, not for me again. But I get asked the weirdest.
I mean, I've definitely had like
a
I've had guys.
Enema.
I've never had someone ask me if they could pee on me, but I've had guys ask me if I would pee on them.
Oh, I've peed on plenty of people. That's
I've
fine.
Never. I can't. I can't even pee in the same room as somebody. Like I can't. Like I'm. You know, like I went to like Catholic school from like pre-K to 12th grade. Like I don't even like being naked in the shower by myself. Like, you know what I mean?
I can relate to that actually. That speaks to me on monumentous levels. I get that.
You understand? It's just like pee on you.
To detract from our political conversation, I never like, and I don't knock it because I've never tried it, but I've never viewed like peeing as like a sexual thing. I never like registered, you know.
Okay.
And so I don't know if / when that would ever be an occurrence at this point of my in my life. You know, it's just
it's about power.
Sometimes it's just you're in Fire Island, 6 a.m. happens, and you're drunk.
Oh, okay, thank
and
you.
Things happen.
Yeah, Fire Island.
A little drunk.
Hey,
fire,
so you're on Fire Island. You're on Fire Island. Wrong. Like you're already fucking on the beach, and he's just like.
Let's
like
do it.
Do
it.
I'm
at that point, you know what like, I would say if it was on Fire Island, I'd be like, sure.
That's a good way to clean sand off your feet.
Yeah,
exactly.
You gotta chocha off your feet. Go to Chocha Beach.
Yeah, chocha.
Well, you don't want to pee on their feet. You want to pee on their face.
Feet, face?
I mean,
no. Keep going 100.
You know, salty. It's like different.
Pee on feet though, because it's funnier.
So you want to laugh while it happens?
Yeah, I'm a goofy.
He's just trying to keep the punchline.
It's
because
it's just
clean.
Funny. Just
I'm sorry.
On
I'm
bitch
really
street.
Dirty. I am really, really
no,
dirty.
It's funny, right?
I absolutely can't get dirty. He's writing a joke.
Because it's just all warm around like, the ankles and shit. But
yeah.
The face, you know, is the...
That's the difference between, like, a comic and, like... So, like, you're telling the real story. He's trying, like, how can I punch this up?
No, I'm thinking, like, how could I do this so it's entertaining?
Yeah,
like, peeing on your face can be fun, but then you got to hear the "oh, got in my fucking hair" and all this shit. But on the feet, there's
no
complaints. No,
because if they want it in their face already, they're not thinking about their hair.
Women,
I can't
relate.
Yeah.
Not in my hair,
says the man in the wig.
Yeah. Not here. Not
sorry,
here.
Don't
pee here.
She's not a man.
It's not the same.
You
kind
can
of
misgender
thing,
me any way you want.
It's sort of like it's sort of like if you do a facial shot, right? He's like, yeah, go ahead. And then she always says, not in my hair. That's not like a thing.
I love it everywhere.
In your hair, even you wouldn't even be upset?
No.
You got conditioner. And I don't wear wigs when I'm having sex.
I mean, it's happened to me that I've like blown someone at a bar. And like later on, my friends are like, "Do you have something on your hair?" I'm like, "Ooh, okay.
You know something about Mary Mo, man? Yeah. A little bit of hair gel."
It's
it usually happens during your shows.
Great.
Damn,
you're
see,
like,
your shows
that's
inspire
why you
shit.
Missed my...
No, my shows inspire people to leave the room.
and give a blowjob.
Yeah.
It's
well,
going,
okay, it's inspiring,
you,
I guess.
Did
your
you
shows inspire
show,
people
did
to
you,
get
like,
it on?
Creep off and do it?
Huh?
You did it while the show was going on, or did you like...
Oh, no, in the bathroom. I'm classy.
Oh, okay. Oh, no.
It's like, what do you think of me?
Yeah. On the stage?
I always say I put the
No, because we're like at a bar, so I just figure, hey.
So are you also on the bar. Like a live performer?
No.
Okay. But I know you're a live performer.
Uh-huh.
So now, I know for me, like if I'm killing it, like the second I get off stage, I'm like super horny. Like I just like... Like, you know, like, it's like, if I'm doing well, it's just like, oh my God, I want to bang somebody.
That adrenaline rush.
Right? Totally. Yeah. But like, but if I bomb, I just want to go to White Castles by myself and just like,
yo.
Yes. Right?
Yo.
Right?
I'm like the most, I'm very like self-deprecating and very like hypercritical of myself. And there are definitely moments where I come off stage and I'm like, fuck yeah, like I did that. Or like.
It's just like, fuck me now.
Like, yeah. Like there's definitely like a little bit of a fire thing going
and you're
on.
You're just like. All right, let's go. And then, like, but if you bombed, it's just like, don't eat it.
But it's like the lowest of lows.
Yes.
Like, there's no real, like, middle ground of, like, feeling shitty on yourself.
That serotonin away.
Yo, like, it's horrible. And it's like, even if the crowd is still receptively okay, but internally you're like,
I bombed, it's like, you could have an applause break, but in your mind, if you're like, I just missed that setup, I missed that punch. This is a farce. Like, I don't understand why they're laughing. Like, I will have this entire, like, internal dialogue that I'm a piece of shit, and I'll go to White Castles and just shout my fucking burgers in my face.
Yes, I'm, like, my biggest, like, saboteur in that regard. Like,
right.
It'll ruin the night, like, completely.
Oh.
And then I'm ball and chained to the bar until, like, 4 a.m.
oh, my God. It's like, I don't deserve love. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, I get in like a whole kind of like rhetoric. And then it's like, I have it until I feel like I killed again. And then I'm just like, I'm back.
Thankfully, that's the nice thing about our little Brooklyn scene is that there's a guaranteed 3 sets per night of when there's a show. So it's typically... Somehow it's become routine across the board for like parties everywhere. It's like the first show will start at... 12:30, 1 a.m., 2:30, and then like the third and final set will be at like 3:30, and it'll like kind of lead.
Damn!
Oh,
it's
we go there.
Very what nocturnal. Time does it close?
4.
That shit is late.
We're very
I'm
nocturnal,
old.
But you make bank because people are drinking, they're tipping, it's cool, and like they're vibing. It's just great. Like that's and I mean I've had to like slowly learn that tips do not. Like dictate how well a performance went.
Right.
Yeah.
But when they do tip well and it's a good performance, that is like the ultimate high.
That's
you come out with like lettuce like no other at the end of the night.
You know? You don't have to take the train home that night. You can take an Uber.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. Mm-hmm. No passenger seat riding. You ain't got to do no handy.
You can't. I want this motherfucker by myself.
XL.
Like, yeah. Like, morning. This is mine.
Hell yeah.
Put my flag on it.
Well, typically, especially like as a drag queen, there's the occasional cabbie who, I mean, there have been several times where like they're outside of a drag show or like a drag bar, and there are cab drivers who are. Like, there's a culture known as chasers. So it's like a fetish for like dudes.
It's like an Asian fetish, but for
like cross dressers.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like they hang out and they'd be like, "Hey, I'll take you home."
But it's weird because they don't seem to pick up on like social cues or like
we were literally talking about this last night
because it was happening. Chasers were out in full force last night.
What happened?
Well, there's lack of understanding boundary first and foremost, and that it supersedes even just like someone trying to like grab you. It's like I'll be having a conversation with him, and there will be like this like third party like mouth breather that's just like injecting himself into the like not talking but like so like say you and I are having a conversation
right
he will literally be right here
just stand there
standing not saying anything not saying hello not trying to like introduce himself just standing and like observing it's very like serial killery
it's dangerous
it's weird like it's super dangerous
because I'll say it like and I'm sorry to like kind of like hop in on your story. But, like, you know, I've got a show at Otter's Drunken Head. It's, like, 14th between, like, A and B. And so I had on a comic that performs in drag sometimes. And
oh, yeah.
Felicia.
Yeah.
So Felicia was on. She did a great job. met some of these dudes at the mm-hmm. bar. They were like, oh, let's like do some lines. They went to the bathroom, whatever. Comes back. These guys are like on her like white on rice. And I look at them and like it's this literally the second I saw them in my head, I just started. And I'm like,
oh,
like, and I'm like, oh, girl, you in danger.
Yes,
and
so, like, Molly.
And so,
Molly, you're in danger, girl.
And so, like, we were about to leave. And so I was just like, listen, we're going to go. Are you going to be okay? Do you want to stay with them? And she's like, no. And I'm like, all right, you need to come with us. And so... she's just like, well, I don't know. And so I was just like, no, you're coming with us. And so these guys are just like, I'm like, all right, you know, have a good night, you guys. Thanks for coming to the show. She's going to come with us. Have a good night. And so, like, they grabbed her arm and they're just like, no, she's staying here.
You get very aggro.
And so, like, you know, and now, like, don't puff up my inner black woman. Like, don't do that. You know what I mean?
I don't mean to laugh.
But, like, you know what I mean? It's just like, and I'm like, she's coming with us. No. And there's, oh, no, she's having a good time. I'm like, honey, let her go. She's coming. And so I just literally, like, took the guy's arm off her hand, his hand off her arm. And I was just like, she's coming with us. And I'm like, bye. And they're like, but we bought her a drink. I'm like, I don't give a shit. Like, she's coming.
Yeah.
And they're just like, and they were just so, like, aggressive with it. And it was just like, how, like, aside from the fact that you're, like, some, like, hillbilly trying to put someone in your basement, how do you think that, like, real people are going to like accept this, like, you know what I mean?
But I don't think they go there because
I think they have fetishized.
Yeah, you're right. You're there.
Fetishize the situation so much that they don't necessarily see
how creepy they are.
See, well,
they
drag queens as real people.
They only because it transcends a gender like binary for them, because you could be the most outlandish drag queen who's not even trying to look feminine per se, and just the fact that it's somebody who, I guess, in this regard, I guess it kind of does fall under some weird gender binary, because it's like you're like they're turned on by the fact that there's a dude. Yeah. But and so I don't know if it's a tapping into a taboo factor, if it's a psychological thing in general. But it's, and the reason I go to psychological is because across the board, any chaser that I've ever like encountered, it's very much so the same MO, same like logic, same quotes, even like it's,
wait, what's the quote?
It's just like the same kind of like luring tactics. Like even last night, like before I was like literally trying to close out my tab at the bar, and there's just some dude who, like, typically you see the same kind of people and you can glean when someone's a fresh face and doesn't necessarily belong there. It was like not an older dude, but I'd say probably like in his 40s, give or take,
right?
Just someone who didn't clearly know the scene whatsoever, and I'm just there, and he's like up, hunched up on the bar like this, facing away from the bar, and as I'm like clearing out, he's like, hey, so I have a question. And I'm like, what's up? And I've just kind of like learned to like play coy, but assertively coy. And he was like, so what's a guy like me gotta do to talk to a girl like you? And it's like, you just like talk to me if like you really want to have a conversation, but like if you like, if there's like a sexual connotation to it, because I see where it's going,
right?
I was like, and you know, I play it nice because I give them the benefit of the doubt. I'm like, well, I'm a married woman, just, you know, kind of like let it roll off, like wait for my credit card to come back, sign off. And he's like, well, if you weren't married, then what? Like, what would I? And it's like, that's not the point of the conversation here. Like, I knew.
I just shut you down.
Right. Like, I knew from the jump where it was going to come from.
Yeah.
And you were still.
And I reflected you, and you don't care.
Well, and then it even went to.
Well, man, you got to give a definitive no. And it has to be very stern.
Well, when I said, well, I'm wifed up. And then he was like, well, he's like, well, I bet you keep your man real happy at home, huh? And I was like, yeah, I do, actually. And then I got my credit card, signed off, and I was like, bye. And then just, like, went outside. Because that's all you can do. Like, right. if you sit and entertain it too much, it can become very, very hostile. I mean, not that I'm, like, trans-identifying, but there are so many things where it can go down that route where it's someone who isn't in a situation specifically for, like, love or romance, and it becomes this fetish where it's a man who's fetishizing a trans person. Same thing with, like, a race even. You know, it all goes down that same route. But for trans people specifically who are constantly being murdered, it's out of these strange, bizarre, unfounded acts of aggression that don't really have any substantial reasoning behind it, and it goes to the worst extent possible because I don't know if it's a repressive thing. You know, it gets really crazy.
It's definitely like a latent, like, you know, I'm not a psychologist, but, like, I can just imagine that, like, you've got this chaser, mm-hmm. and they see you, and you're living out loud, and you're living the life that they wish they didn't have to cut themselves for. You know what I mean?
Totally.
And so I think that it's like once they feel like they've admired you, it's just like, well, this is like, well, I fucked it, I gotta kill it. Like, you know what I mean?
No, I get it. Yeah,
it's like I think that it's a very, because they. I find that I also, like, I don't have it the same kind of fetishist that a trans person would have, but I definitely have white guys that have a fetish for black women.
Totally.
And so, you know, it's just like, you get that, like, I've definitely had, like, one of those things where it's just like, oh, call me your slave. Like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, I've had that. Yeah, I've had that. And it's just like, I'm your little bitch, I'm your dirty whore. Like, it's so... Like, granted, I'm not a trans woman,
right.
But being a black woman, I've definitely been in a situation where, like, you meet this person, they seem cool. You might have even been on, like 4 or 5 dates with them.
And then they get comfortable.
And then they start acting a fool. Like, mm-hmm. And you're just like, whoa, what is this?
I think that what happens with these chasers, specifically, like with drag queens and trans people, is that these are people that are blurring the gender lines that these men or mm-hmm. these chasers are so, you know, close to. So now when somebody does that, it falls into a sexual place. Mm-hmm. So they feel like they're entitled and that the person is putting themselves in that position because they want to be fetishized mm-hmm. and... like grabbed on, kind of.
I agree. Well, it's interesting because I've always had respect for women, but drag has given me a much different perspective, introspective,
walk
if you will.
Shoes.
It's very interesting to go through, like, in a very specific hour window of, you know, like midnight to 4 a.m. But it's like, damn, you guys really have it fucking tough. Like, aside from, like, having to wear heels or, like, or having an expectation to wear, like, specific things, it's like there are people just hounding women, and I really can't fathom what, like, outside of a bar scenario for myself, you know. It's like,
right.
It's very strange because, I mean, I've had, like, day drag situations where, like, I'm on the sidewalk in full whatever, full regalia, and I'm catcalled, but mockingly, and that fucking annoys me. It's not like my feelings are hurt, but it's like, so if I were if I really identified as a woman, and this was something that was a daily occurrence, but it was really in more of a sexual tone or an overtly sexual tone that was more so predatory, that would really get to me.
It's scary.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, if, because, like, that's the whole thing, and I feel like a lot of, especially cisgender men, don't understand is that, like, being a...
What's cis?
It means you're a straight man.
Oh.
Right?
That you define to what you... The gender that
yeah,
you
the gender you're born into.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cis?
So, yeah. So, cis. Like, C-I-S. I don't know what the etymology of that is.
Yeah. So basically, you were born a man, you are attracted to women.
And you identify yourself as a man.
And you identify yourself as a man and a straight man.
But it's not exclusionary to just straight. No.
Okay.
So, like, I'm a cisgendered gay man. Like, I don't identify outside of being male.
Okay.
Whereas you can have someone who's gender fluid, trans.
Okay.
You can have cis female, obviously. So it goes both ways. But basically,
no, thank you for correcting me.
No problem. Yeah, yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah. Not to like jump.
No. I love learning new things.
Total. I mean, it's new for me. Literally,
so when
I'm just
did this term.
It's probably like a couple of years old.
It's been around for a while, but I've only recently started hearing it come up in like common.
Yeah, in common language recently.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's.
I've never heard
I mean,
it.
Because the opposite of transsexual, it's like the antonym to like say grammatically,
yeah, correct.
Grammatically,
yeah,
would be cisgender. Mm-hmm. So I think it.
Yeah, I think I think it's logical. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
I just never heard it before.
Yeah,
it's pretty fresh, I would say. Okay. I think just kind of given again that like sociopolitical climate, I think
right.
with the uprise of trans activism and all that entails, that I think there's been that dialogue that's now been opened up to really bring
right.
that more to a common language.
And
right.
and I'm trying to, you know, I'm an old bitch, but I'm trying to adapt and learn. And, you know what I mean? But like. I feel like I think that a lot of quote unquote cisgender males don't understand the fact that like literally as a woman, like any day of your life, you literally just feel like your entire day is made up of avoiding rape. Like, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's just kind of like, especially if you're a performer, like a night performer, like mm-hmm. myself, you know, and I can't imagine what like a sex worker goes through. You know what I mean?
I really can't imagine that.
Because like I feel like I'm a regular girl and like I don't try to like over sexify myself or anything like that. Mm. Like, you know, this bitch got double D's. I'm not trying to flash them. And so like, you know, but I can't imagine like putting yourself in such a vulnerable situation to sustain yourself financially, mm. like day after day. And, I think that a lot of guys don't understand that. Like you literally feel like your entire day is like avoiding a rape. Like, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's just like, oh, I'm going into the subway. It's 10:30. That weird guy is looking at me.
Yeah, the car's a little more empty at that point. Yeah,
you
yeah,
know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah,
it's
totally.
Just like, let me go over here. This lady looks like a nice lady. That guy looks like he's got a kid. Like, you're just like literally trying to find situations where you're trying to protect yourself from an attack.
Totally.
And I don't think that a lot of people, especially male people that identify as, I'm going to say at this particular point, heterosexual cisgender, because you might be cisgender, but you're also perform in drag. Mm-hmm. So I think that you kind of understand that having that coat of femininity mm-hmm. on you in late nights in the devil hours mm-hmm. where people are just kind of hunting. So
it's so hunty, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just like because you know, I'm not saying that this bitch can't go out in a miniskirt and fucking hair and makeup and like fucking do her shit, but at the same time I know that when I'm going out that way, like, I need to be rolling deep because,
there's
like,
an awareness that you need to have.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that the difference between, like, you know, you growing up as a cisgendered male, because, like, mm-hmm. I just literally found out, like, 2 seconds ago that you can, like, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, and the difference of me growing up as being a cisgendered woman and like I literally have like, you know, gone to all girls school from like 6th grade to 12th is that there is that time of day that is so precarious.
Mm-hmm.
You know what
mm-hmm.
I mean? And it feels like, oh, well, that seems stupid. But, like, I feel like the witching hours are from, like, 9 p.m. to, like, 5 a.m.
Totally.
And, it doesn't matter what you're wearing. It doesn't matter where you were. And none of that shit matters. It's just you're in the wrong place at the wrong time, having the wrong face.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, because it's neither here nor there. I mean, obviously, nobody's asking for anything, regardless of how they're presenting.
Exactly.
But it's just unfortunate. It's just it's that circumstantially based, like, nightmare situation, you know? Mm-hmm. The best you can do, like you said, is just have that mentality, unfortunately, of where you're doing character analysis the entire time, and you have to be perched on your fear in order to survive, you know?
Isn't that everyone at nighttime, though?
You know what?
But I feel like
at nighttime,
you're gonna...
I'm very worried about shit, too, and I don't let people get in a certain range with me.
But I feel like you're going to walk into the night a different way than I'm going to walk into the night.
I feel like people will have a different perception, though. In general, I think someone will view a woman based on societal conditioning, thinking that's someone who is more vulnerable, that's someone who can be taken advantage of. Whereas if someone could potentially see a well-built, muscular-looking dude at night on the sidewalk, be like, maybe not going to fuck with this guy. I might have a black eye or
those
two.
Those are people that get shot, though.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, all right, he in shape, but I'll shoot that motherfucker. You know what I mean? So just nighttime, like just nothing good happens at night. That's what I'm saying.
No, it's true.
Protect yourself.
My mom was right.
Keep your ass at home.
Nothing good happens after midnight.
Right. Yes. It's true.
Well, it's ironic because that's how a lot of the people die in the movies, because they lack that sense of...
that street sense.
Yeah, because they're lured into the situation with a very handsome person that turns out he's a killer. And in that way, in the movie, in a lot of ways, explores how queer people and people of our very marginalized communities, how we have to cope with that, and how we are, how strong we are as a community, and how together, not going back to what before when you asked about politics, a while ago, it really is about that. It's about standing up and holding your ground and saying, We all do have each other's back.
There's a tenacity.
Yeah, there's a tenacity in the community that you can't deny, and we do all have each other's backs, straight and gay allies, and all of that.
That's the one thing that I think is really cool about the film also, is because of the fact that it's such an intimately produced project. Like, it brought on so many faces that are part of our family, our community. It is a very, I stress it, a very family-oriented nightlife community, especially out in Brooklyn. And there's a whole other dichotomy between Brooklyn and Manhattan that I won't even get into.
Right.
But Brooklyn specifically, it's a different world. I've traveled and seen different forms of nightlife, and I've experienced different sides of nightlife even here in the city alone, and nothing has made me feel as much of a sense of belonging, of friendship. It's not fair weathered. It's you see the same people. You get
these
very
are your bottom bitches.
Oh, down. People I've only known probably 99% of them in the context of nightlife. But that's right, the family right. thing. It's even if I'm not working, we all just know that's the watering hole, or that's the cheers, we all right. go hang out recreation, but that's where you get to learn about thy fellow man or woman or anyone in right. between. It's just cool like that. So
and that culture is what the movie celebrates.
Yeah, right. it's cool to see that something that is so precious and near and dear to both him and I, and something that can be related to anybody in our community specifically, get it, I guess, put under a microscope and then have a cool twist to it.
Right.
It's neat to have something that's so niche.
It's like a martini with a twist of lime.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. That's actually not so bad. Maybe I'll try that. Is that a recommendation?
Okay. We'll do it after the show. I'm getting the bitch get off the mic hand. Before we go, though, Jose, where can everyone follow you on your social media? When can they hear information about the film?
Well, so we just finished shooting half of the movie, and we're ready to go into the second round. So today we launched the first trailer. The 30-second teaser is really cool.
Says, brother.
So go to killerunicornfilm.com. Thank you. So killerunicornfilm.com, and then you can watch the trailer. And today we also just launched a second round of an Indiegogo campaign to help us raise funds to, you know, finish helping off the people. So go there, and on Facebook is Killer Unicorn, and on Instagram Killer Unicorn Film. And that's it, because I don't care about my own personal Instagram.
Okay. Bible Girl Boo, where can everyone see you on social media? When are your next shows?
Well, so as far as shows go, I'll gladly plug the charity party. That's every second Thursday of each month. And you can find it at Macri Park in... Is that considered Williamsburg?
Yeah.
Okay, so in Williamsburg, Macri Park. and the show starts... Well, doors open for the party around like 10 or so. And shows are pretty fluid, but shows happen. And we have raffles and cool stuff, so come through. And supporting a good cause, all proceeds that are made through the show do go directly to the foundations and organizations that we are having represented per month. And then you can find me anywhere on social media with a simple search of Bible Girl 666, all one word.
Okay. Jason Cross.
LaughAtFirstSight.com. Site is spelled SITE.
You can catch Big Talkin' Brewskies every single Friday night from 6 to 8 o'clock here at FLO Empire Radio on January the 20th, Inauguration Day, the beginning of the end. We will be having
pretty fun. That's
ooh,
be
fun. Careful, Rush is gonna come and shut you down,
listen,
girl.
Listen, I'll call you guys.
Down, you bitches.
I'm gonna be down to DC for that, so I'll call you guys.
Are you gonna be there
from DC?
Yeah, call us. January 20th, we're having a special edition of Fashionably Funny at Broadway Comedy Club. It's called Politically Incorrect, the inauguration edition, and we have a ton of political comics and writers. We've got writers from SNL, Triumph the Dog from the election series. We've got writers from Comedy Central and NBC and a bunch of TV shows, and everybody is going to be doing their best political and Trump material so that we can cry and hug together. And, you know, be good to yourselves, be good to your others, basically. And if you voted for Trump, go fuck yourself. Have a great night, you guys.
Good night.
Happy Friday. Night. We love you. Bye.
Bye.
Yeah, big talking brewskis. Marissa Smith is who you see. Water cooler combo in here. Crack a cold one, we're on the air. Big talking brewskis. Marissa Smith is who you see. Water cooler combo in here. Crack a cold one, we're on the air. Kicking back, having a few beers, we're chatting. Pull up your chair, we're all relaxing. Any subject, we never dismiss. Big talking brewskis with Marissa Smith. Comedy, sex, relationships, war. Any subject, we got it in store. Big talking brewskis is coming in live. Crack when open, Marissa has arrived. Big talking brewskis with Marissa Smith. Yeah.